Welcome to the SICK Network Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing current and topical issues affecting SICKs across the global diaspora.
Hi, and welcome to the SICK Network Podcast. You join us for episode 16. And today we're going to be touching on the subject of hate crime and Sikhs and how it's been reported. And in particular, we're going to look at the sort of a sensational report really that's come out this week from over in the States, where the FBI had released their kind of annual compilation of nationwide incidents and kind of in over 1,000 categories of hate crimes in relation to faith and religion. Sikhs, to probably many people around the world, were surprisingly second in the largest category of religious-based incidents, criminal incidents in the States, at 21.3% overall, only behind anti-Jew hate crime, anti-Semitic, who were at 31.9%. So really, we're going to be looking at that in particular, looking at that report, assessing kind of, the kind of reasons behind it, and obviously looking at the state of play in the UK as well. So delighted to be joined by a guest today, Jaz Singh and Montgomery Singh, and also the now retired former senior director at the National Audit Office, by Dabinderjeet Singh. Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa. Waheguru Ji Ki Fateh. By Dabinderjeet, we're going to start with you today, I thought, and so I just really wanted to first start off just by, I mentioned the now retired Dabinderjeet Singh. How is retirement going for you at the moment?
It doesn't feel like retirement because some people don't have much to do when they retire. I just still don't have the time to do the things I want to do. So I very much I'm looking forward to my first anniversary in May, and then deciding to get into a bit of a routine as to what I want to do. But it's all go at the moment. Moving house next week, so again.
Because he's not really retired, yeah. Right? He's not retired from the Pantak Seva, which was probably predominant time, Yusuf Baji's time for the last 20 years.
I think that's a lifelong Seva. I don't think we're ever going to retire from that anyway. So.
Yeah. Definitely that will not be the case. So yeah, by the Dabinderjeet Singh, I kind of opened up with a bit of an intro into that report that's come out from the FBI and kind of how prominent Sikhs were on that list. So I suppose it's even for me, it's really kind of sensational reading, isn't it? To see, something that has been, subconsciously dismissed really as a major issue, and obviously, the work that you in particular were doing on the census and how this is all related. So initially, what was your initial viewpoint when this was sort of report came out and the figures came out? Were you shocked?
Shocked is probably not the right word. I think we probably need to go back to 9/11 because this is America. 9/11, well, it's going to be, the 22nd anniversary this year? And you remember probably a couple of years ago in the lockdown, the very first virtual lobby we did was on hate crime. And we had Balwi Singh Soddi's brother, who connected with us from California. And he explained how his brother was shot dead a few days after 9/11. What a lot of us didn't know was one of his other brothers was also shot dead, taxi driver. And so I think when we talk about hate crime, and let's focus on America to begin with because of the FBI figures, is Sikhs in America have had it far worse than any other country. And the reason why I say that is Balwi Singh Soddi has been the first of many. There have been actually many Sikhs, young and old, that have been killed and they mean killed because of their identity. You know, and in some senses, that does explain why after 9/11, you actually had new organizations spring up in America, Sikh Coalition, SAUDA, United Sikhs. All these were originally focused on the issue of the Sikh identity following 9/11. So, you know, in 2023, to be getting this data from the FBI, which still shows, despite all the work those organizations have done with the US administration, that, you know, there is still much work to be done. If they documented all the Sikhs that have been killed since 9/11, I think it's definitely double figures, probably hasn't reached triple figures. You know, we had the shooting at the Gurdwara. You know, we shouldn't forget this in America, in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And therefore, we need to see this in that context, that whilst we've had it bad in terms of, I can point to, you know, the Sikh dentist slashed with a machete, the elderly Sikh gentleman killed in Coventry, you know, yes, we've had some serious incidents and a death. We've had attacks on Gurdwaras, but nothing as bad as America. So in America, when this data came out, first thing to say is the Sikh population in America relative to the wider community is so much smaller. And therefore, to have so many hate crimes reported, and that's the other thing, these are reported hate crimes, which often tend to be the more serious. So I think this should be a wake-up call for definitely Sikhs in America, but actually Sikhs across the globe, that the Sikh identity continues to be seen negatively by the perpetrators of these hate crimes. And that goes to education, it goes to racism, discrimination, you name it. And then the other thing that we should point out is, you know, we talk about, you know, our identity was given by our gurus. So we could stand out and we would stand up for the rights of others. But actually, what we found in the West is, and let's begin with the West, I'll go on to India as well. In the West, that very identity is, you know, being used by those racists and people that are ignorant to say, this is the most visible minority across the globe. So if you wear a turban, you have uncut hair, you know, more and more women are wearing turbans. So that is a phenomenon of the last 15 to 20 years. You know, they're becoming targets of people that clearly see something happening in the world and they target us mistakenly, and that concept of mistaken identity was a phrase that came from America. But the point is, it's worrying that it's still continuing at the rate it is. And I will stop after saying this final thing. You know, don't forget, this very identity was used in 1984 in the streets of Delhi and across 130 cities in India. You know, that very identity that currently Indian politicians would praise the sacrifice of our gurus, standing up for others' rights, practice their faith, defending them. But actually, when it suits the politicians and the political parties, they make us targets as minorities because it's a vote game. And it's a vote game everywhere we look. So we will be a minority in every single country across the globe. But we are a minority that has a disproportionate number of attacks, hate crimes, as seen in America.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, what Baji said about the mistaken identity as well. And that phrase gets used a lot. And I think we can explore that in the discussion about Islamophobia and how that sort of confusion also clouds the description and narrative around anti-Sikh hate crime. But if you actually track back, very few people know this, that there were attacks on Sikhs going far back as 1907 in the West, in Bellingham, Washington, which was known as the Bellingham Riots. Now, They were classified as the anti-Hindu riots because at that time, you know, anyone from India was classified as a Hindu, as opposed to Indian because of the confusion to do with Native Americans. But they were predominantly Sikh men in that. In fact, 90% of those attacked were turbaned, sabat-suited Sikhs. So again, this whole mistaken identity, and if it's just framing and description, the reality of the situation is that the turban, the identity of the turban, has been a target for the bigots, for the racists. And then when you get these coordinated attacks, which they brand as riots and whatnot, then, you know, this is when it becomes really dangerous. So we have a history of this. It goes back in the West over 100 years. It's not something that's well triggered by 9/11. No doubt that 9/11 increased the rate of hate crimes against the visible Sikh identity. But pre 9/11 as well, we've all grown up in the West. We've experienced it. I bet you everyone on this call has experienced race hate, religious hate, sorry, in some way. But I think this whole thing about description, narrative, mistaken identity is something we definitely need to explore because it keeps clouding the discussion as we go into deeper into it.
Well, the thing is, right, and this is what we've talked about in the past as well, is when any incident happens around the world, the government or the representative for those people will put out a statement, whether that's, we're seeing it in the extremic sense of the war with Ukraine, but whenever there's an incident of any nationals in a foreign country, you will see their country come to their aid, support them, and raising the profile of their own nationals in foreign countries. When there have been, and there have been many, and we'll talk about some of these, but there have been, when we talk about a hate crime, it's not only in the individual, it's the motivation around that crime, but it's also against property, gurdwaras, organizations. And when gurdwaras have been defaced, attacked, smashed, individuals have had their life threatened, you have never seen India condemn that race hate crime, support the Sikh victims, whether they're gurdwara, whether they're individuals, come to their aid, and put out there in the global world that these are Sikhs, this is their Sikh identity. They played a huge part in India's independence. Their identity should be protected. More should be done to protect gurdwaras, and more education should be put out there. You never see that. You only see that from Sikh organizations. And I think their reach is going to be limited. And I think you have to, and we've said this to the mainstream media, does a Sikh have to die to get its 2 minutes on mainstream media news that there's been a hate crime and there's an attack? And ultimately, sometimes it feels like that. And I know Bajie Devinder Singh, he himself was a victim of a horrendous hate crime, being threatened to be burnt alive while on the London Underground. And that, again, it, because of the profile, I guess, of Bajie, that managed to sort of get to the news. But I'll let Bajie talk about that case. But it just shows you that actually we are isolated as Sikhs completely.
Yeah.
And you're up against the global media that have, since 9/11, have portrayed this image of Islamic terrorism and Islamic extremism, coupled with somebody with a turban and a beard, led from Osama bin Laden and other Islamic preachers. But the reality is 90% of people around the world, probably higher, that anyone would interact with that had a turban and a beard is going to be a Sikh. And it's that image that's portrayed that there is no challenge to, no one saying, well, hold on, this isn't right. And we have a Sikh population that do huge positive things in every country that we exist in and live in. But that message, and it's recognized, it just never makes the headlines because it's a juicy line that people want to run with. And it's dangerous because there's people's lives that get impacted by this. And I think this is something that we all collectively need to think about and challenge more.
But yeah, I'm going to I'll talk about the incident that you referred to. But before that, I think that there's another really important thing, because Mangal Singh talked about history and America, etc. And I've talked about this. So when my father came to Britain in the 1950s, it's a sad state of affairs that many Sikh men that came in the 50s and 60s, they compromised their identity. They assimilated. They thought they could assimilate. They could fit in by removing their turbans, cutting their hair. My father did that. I think it lasted about 6 months. He constantly had headaches. And the doctor said, well, you need to grow your hair and tie your turban. Now, the reason why I mention this, that was the sad reality of racism in this country. People couldn't rent a room, they couldn't get jobs, and they decided to assimilate. The difference is, just before 9/11, we had the 300th anniversary of the creation of the Khalsa. And what we've seen globally is Sikhs, especially younger Sikhs, and Sikhs that bring up their kids, they're bringing them up in Sikhi Sarup. So actually, if I go back to when I was at school, you know, how many Amritdhari Sikhs used to go to school? Well, you know, I could literally count them on one hand, and probably in most of the schools we went to. Now, actually, in places where there are large numbers of Sikhs, we see many more Gesadhari and Amritdhari kids. And therefore, the generations that have come after our forefathers are not only proud of their identity, they stand up for their identity. And I think that's never really been allowed to sort of come across in a way that, you know, we haven't been able to explain that to governments, ourselves, UK, in America, in Canada, and say, we're here to stay. You know, we are British, we are Canadian, we're America. This is part and parcel of your responsibility. Because, yeah, it'd be great if we had a government that spoke on behalf of Sikhs. The reality is, it's almost hypocritical if we expect that from people in India. Because the only time they raise these issues is to criticize America, to criticize Britain when an incident happens.
Exactly.
That's not their purpose is, you know, as I said, it's hypocritical, because they talk about how the style might be disrespected, and yet it gets disrespected day in, day out in India.
Sorry to cut you short on that one. It's interesting, you know, when you mentioned about the 50s and the 60s and the whole sort of the commentary with the government, and you know, whether they really do understand the Sikh identity and the growth of the Sikh identity within the Sikh diaspora. But you know, they've got to take a message from the fact that when we did come in the 60s and 70s, so early on from the outset, we set up our institutes, we set up the Gurdwara, and you know, that was done before even people bought properties. You know, in local areas, Gurdwara were bought, and we ensured our parents' generation, grandparents' generation ensured we had the hub for the community. Now, I don't think, if you put us in comparison to the Hindu community, for instance, they do not have the number of places of worship that we do in this country. By far, I think we are probably double, considering our numbers now, as per the last census, are probably less than the Hindu community. Now, it does give a message that, you know, we were showing the community that we're here to stay. You know, we're here for a longer term. You know, we're establishing roots here. We're putting our we're establishing and embedding our identity within your communities. So the fact that the turban is still not seen as part of the landscape of this area of Britain, for instance, is concerning. And, you know, I think we've done the groundwork. We've done what we need to do to give off that message. But just a personal opinion on that, you know, I suppose.
And just building on that, Mangal Singh, you know, you mentioned Gurdwaras. You know, we've seen this week, you know, Gurdwaras are under attack. And it is a hate crime. Simple as that. You know, if someone came out in national newspapers and started talking about, you know, places of worship from other faiths, say synagogues are not safe places, etc., there'd be a huge outcry. And actually, we need to call out when our Gurdwaras are targeted, because, you know, like you said, for Sikhs, the Sikh way of life, from birth, deaths, marriage, Gurdwara is central. I remember recently when Shepherd's Bush Gurdwara put out that little video, you know, showing the history of the first Gurdwara. And my mum turned around to me and said, you know, when you were born, that's where we took you. We took you to Shepherd's Bush because, you know, when they wanted to name me, it was ingrained. It's ingrained in Sikhs that the Gurdwara is central to everything we do. And therefore, when Gurdwaras are attacked, whether it be the Darbar Sahib in 1984, or whether it be Nankana Sahib, you know, the Sakha, which is being marked this week, you know, this has happened throughout our history. And we really need to grow up as a community in the West and say, when our Gurdwaras are targeted, whether it's graffiti, whether it's, you know, people going there knowing that we have certain rules about Gurdwaras, or whether it's just people spreading untruths, I think it's a duty upon every single Sikh to stand up for our Gurdwaras, because it's an attack on our faith.
That's actually, but it's really a dangerous reality as well of what we're facing, and especially from people who are in management committees across Gurdwara. And if you look at the demonizing of a Gurdwara, that's not just happened recently. Recent things are the latest step. But again, despite knowing the history of Sikhs, particularly this country, having had the British Raj for 200 odd years, and as Munkamal said, the first things the Sikhs did established their Gurdwara here. And it showed the connection to their faith as well as the community. But for years later, we've had issues with the kakars, the turban in workplaces, the bus driver, right, the same thing, case. Then you had the motorcycle cases. You had the school cases with Govinda Singh Mandla, kakar, kirpan cases, gare cases. All of these cases have happened, and we've had to fight for our right to have the kakar protected. These weren't gifted or given to Sikhs by government. They were fought for and won. But moving forward, despite the increase in numbers, the positivity that's recognized by politicians, there is still an intent to try and either control or conform Gurdwara to what other places of worship would be, and compare it to other standards. I mean, we saw this with the COVID pandemic, where they were considering it would be okay for someone to matha tek in comparison as going to the altar and bowing their head and maybe coming back, and had no concept of what actually living Guru Granth Sahib Ji Maharaj, Prakash there, and what it means to a Sikh, Katha Kirtan. And they actually even said, and the Sikh, not representative that they chose, it was just Veer Singh at the time who had to resign, was not connected to Gurdwara and was had in calls had okayed that it was okay not to have Kirtan and Katha in a Gurdwara, and that an individual could just go and pay their respects or what have you. And I think that just shows, it's a sign that they do not understand, or they don't want to understand, because of the power of Sikhi, the sovereignty of Sikhi that it has, and what Guru Granth Sahib Ji instills in the individual. We've had it with the Charity Commission. Multiple times, the Charity Commission have raised concerns around Shastar in a Gurdwara. So that is the Karpanna, the Khande, the Kare that are adorned around Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji's Palki, pretty much in every Gurdwara around the world. And they see that as safeguarding issues, or they take objection to that. Similarly, with photos of Shaheed Singhs, our martyrs, going back from Guru Arjan Dev Ji, the first Shaheed, Baba Deep Singh, Bhai Mani Singh, all of the Shaheeds, even to our modern day Shaheeds, who have given their life for their religion, their faith. These establishments and these organizations find it difficult to accept. And the worst thing is, when you explain it to them, they absolutely get it. But what they say back to you is, yeah, it was certain Sikhs that raised objection to it, certain individuals. And I think this, that whole concept of trying to liberalize or sort of make Sikhs soft, or take these core pillars away from our faith is there is a, I believe there's a strategic aim for this. And these recent claims by Sikh Women's Aid that a massive statement to make that all Gurdwara are unsafe for women, which has been widely criticized, but it's a report that very few actually recognize, accept. The data is so limited by their own admission that the claims just do not justify or stand up to the information that they gathered. But it's sensational headlines, which again, as you said, is a hate crime towards Gurdwara to imply Gurdwaras and Gurdwara practices are unsafe and need to change and things like that. And I said, I think it's a dangerous threat that the community need to respond to.
Well, I think the definition as well. I mean, I know Paji wants to say something, but I think we've always struggled with the definition. I know that in the past, when I've sat in meetings with Tel Mama, for instance, who monitor Islamic attacks, you know, the first thing they turned around and said, give us an academic definition of Sikh hate crime or what anti-Sikh hate is. And I know the APBG for Sikh, British Sikhs, put out a definition. And I think this is the confusion is people assume hate crime is violence and it's a physical violent attack, which, you know, it's part and parcel of what, you know, it's part of what a Sikh hate crime is. But also there's a part which you've mentioned here, Jazz, as well, which is an attack on your belief, an attack on your way of life. And anti-Semitism, Islamophobia defines that quite clearly as well. And we've defined, I think the APBG has defined something along those lines, but I think that public perception within our own community is also hazy around what is anti-Sikh hate.
I think bringing it back to hate crime, and obviously the UK, we need to talk about this. I think what the APPG did do, because obviously Balwinder Singh Sodhi's brother was on that call, and we had something like 25 politicians from across the political party. It's a no-brainer. You know, hate crime, no politician of any political party is not going to say Sikh hate crime doesn't exist. So what the APPG did, quite simply, was put out that report on the back of that lobby and wrote to government, say, we need to decide what to call it. The suggestion was anti-Sikh hate based on what the police were already calling it, the definition. And thirdly, how do you increase reporting of it? Because if there's underreporting. And actually, since that report, the government has gone back and forth with the APG, the Home Office, the Department for Communities. It keeps changing its name, so I'm just going to call it the Department for Communities. And they still haven't, years later, you know, agreed or disagreed with either what you call it or what the definition is. Because what we didn't want to do was end up in a situation where government has one definition, the community has a different definition, which is what has happened with Islamophobia. Because to us, defining it and changing a few words is easy, but it's the recognition of it officially by government. And in the UK, at least one thing is clear, and we should share this with those listening to this podcast, is of a Labour government are quite considerable. And Keir Starmer is on record and has put it in writing to Gurdwaras that he will recognise anti-Sikh hate alongside anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. That's great, but it's our job as individual Sikhs to hold the Labour Party and the Labour leadership to say that's the first step. So when in government, if government start to appreciate that anti-Sikh hate genuinely exists, I think that would be beneficial to Sikhs in America, Sikhs in Canada, or Sikhs wherever they live, because they can point to the UK to say there's a sizable Sikh community here. The government there recognises this phenomenon. And then you can start tackling that ignorance, because that ignorance starts from the top. So whilst politicians, they understand what our Gurdwaras are. I still remember the permanent secretary at the Foreign Office referring to the Golden Mosque in a tweet. I remember the mayor of the West Midlands outside Guru Nanak Gurdwara's Medic calling it a mosque. And I think that these can be simple Freudian slips, you know, in the middle of an interview. but they're so embarrassing, because if it happened the other way around, you can guarantee there'll be massive outcries. So I think, looking at it positively, hopefully we'll have a government that recognises anti-CK8 and then therefore starts to do something about it. But obviously, Bud, you mentioned the incident with myself. And just to clarify, obviously this has been covered by Sky News as well. The incident was that it was, I remember it very well as though it was yesterday. I was actually on my way to Artham Academy and come and sing. There was a meeting that day on a Saturday. And I decided to pop into work on a Saturday. So I'd done that journey for 30-odd years. And most people that know London know Victoria Station. I went through Victoria Station and I came out through what's called Victoria Place, which is a shopping place. I was crossing the road. And a man came up to me, took a lighter, flicked the lighter, put the flame up, and said, pointed to my beard and said, "I burn people like you." I wasn't bothered. I could clearly see, although he's standing about, 2 meters away, he probably has something wrong with him. Obviously, the lights were still green. So I was standing there. He came closer and he said, pointing to the beard, flicking his lighter again, "I kill people like you." Anyway, I crossed the road. And as I crossed the road, I thought to myself, I was in that position where I could handle myself. I wasn't bothered if he did try and light my beard, I would have responded. But then I thought, I'm going to report this as a hate crime. Later on that day, I went through the process. I had many interviews at Charing Cross Police Station. Initially, they said, "Oh, we haven't got any video footage." And I said, I can point out the cameras. Then the Met put out a tweet showing this man had come down the escalators in Victoria Place in the shops and had done a beeline for me. He was following me. And in the end, they tracked him down and he was sectioned. And often when people are sectioned, it's very difficult to prosecute. But it highlighted why lots of people don't report hate crime. Because even when you have video footage, I think they had 40,000 views of that video when the Met Police put it out, they eventually tracked him down. The amount of times I had to argue with the police, show them the cameras, and then say, then they have this thing about, I think it's called restoration, where the person apologizes to you. And I said, no, this is not the sort of thing that you should accept an apology for. If a person has committed a crime, then the police should investigate and prosecute if that's the right thing. In this case, clearly the person was sectioned. He was unwell, mentally unwell. But the point was, this could have been someone far more vulnerable, and it could have ended up in a situation whereby, the person was burnt alive on the streets of London. And that these are the sorts of cases where people really need to understand. I know when I told people at work about this, when Sky News covered, I didn't tell them, that's what had happened. But when they saw it, the number of people that came up to me and said, "How can this happen in London in this day and age?" And to be honest, people that are usually standing around you, they in London, this is a phenomenon in London. I know, and Kamal will definitely understand this, Jazz and Sukraj probably not, is in London, anything could be happening and people just, keep to themselves and say there's nothing to do with us. So that's another sort of phenomena, that when people are attacked. But Sikhs, we want to send that message. We can't stand for this. When we see people being attacked, do you have that Sikh identity? Then our gurus taught us to do something and stand up for those people that are being victimized. And we need to sing from the rooftops that this phenomena exists, has existed for a very long time and will continue to exist, but hopefully there's some positivity that could come out of a future Labour government that is on record. But it's not just the two Sikh MPs we've got, the Sikh MPs that hopefully we will have, and if we have half a dozen, they all need to remember their faith, what the gurus taught us, and to actually say we should not be ashamed to talk about what happens to Sikhs, whether it be here or abroad, because actually we're human beings. We speak up for others. You know, how many, I remember being heavily involved in the anti-apartheid movement when I was at university, the miner strike. You know, these are all issues that we took up as Sikhs or non-Sikhs or whatever. And therefore, when it comes to our own matters, we can't let politicians, Sikh and non-Sikh, shy away and say, it's absolutely right. If you see injustice, you see discrimination, inequality, stand up and talk about it at least, or do something about it.
I think, and this is the thing, right? It's like you've mentioned there, but it's a very few report it, and there's reasons for that. And it wasn't until the Sikh Network did the first survey, the UK Sikh survey in 2016. It was the first time that we had empirical data that actually went out and asked the community of had they experienced hate crimes, and also what were some of the barriers against them reporting it. And it was surprising that the data we got back from over 4,500 respondents, so it was a huge survey from all demographics, the 21% had reported some kind of hate crime. And it's worth noting that survey was around the Brexit referendum time in 2016, but that equated to 1 in 5 Sikhs that had experienced some sort of hate crime in the last 12 months, which if you extrapolated would come out to 100,000 Sikhs with a hate crime in the last 12 months. And that's a massive number. And this was picked up in the mainstream media. And that sort of led to the discussion and the debate around Sikh hate crime. But when we did the survey again in 2019, this showed a 32% increase. So it wasn't going down. In fact, it was increasing. And when we look at some of the other statistics from the authorities, even the Home Office's data itself had, whilst other faiths were dropping, Sikhs had increased by 7.3%. Slight dip, I think, around the COVID time, but that was due to, I suppose, most people being in lockdown. But even the police, their own stats, have all shown an increase in targeting of Sikhs. The CPS data in 2019 and to 2020 showed a 6% increase. And for a minority community, these are huge numbers. And they put us right up there in the top of religious communities that have been targeted for hate crime. And so the data is there. The evidence is there. Our community is sharing this more and more now through our surveys. But the important thing has been the reasons why we choose not, or many choose not to report it. And the biggest one was because a lack of faith in the system, that it wouldn't go anywhere. There would be limited, little or no action by the police, and is seen as a waste of time. And by your case, how visual and how sort of blatant that was, broad daylight in such a public place, was an indication of that. The police do not take these things seriously. And it's
they do not.
Yeah, and you've got, and it's got to come from the top, that
it has
ultimately
to, and
it's
and
got
the thing
to be a government policy.
We sat, 100%. We sit in meetings. I've sat in meetings with Scotland Yard, and it's always on the agenda. You know, for, I think I've been part of the network of security,
Sikh Security
Forum,
yeah. Forum
that Harmandir Singh chairs. And Harmandir Singh's been involved in police matters going back several decades now, probably 30 years, so right from the outset. And it keeps coming up. You know, we're always talking about the issues and the treatment of victims of hate crime. Now, we as a family have been victims in the sense that, you know, we've reported. So several years ago, my wife was walking down a busy dual carriageway and a white van was pulled up on red lights and they started shouting at her and threw a chicken bone towards her and stuff. Now, I mean, you know, she shouted back and whatever. And she came home and she didn't tell me about the incident until later on. And she goes, oh, this happened today. And I was fuming, you know, I was fuming when it happened. I said, report it. You know, at least that's what the least we can do. So but we went online, we reported the crime online. They've got a tick box there. that you can put for, do you believe it's religiously aggravated? And that's the only place where you can classify Sikh in crime reporting. So, you know, there's no other way. And you can put it in the description when you put that in. But several days later, we got, you know, Met Officer came around and stuff. But yeah, I mean, we just talked her out of taking it any further in the sense that nothing's really going to come out of it. But she had the number plate. She had enough then. All she wanted was, like, you know, put some pressure on the guy so that he knows in future if there's a lone woman walking, that he doesn't throw abuse at her. Because, you know, we've seen what happened with the likes of Wayne Cousins and other people. You know, once you let these minor crimes go, what they go on to become are larger crimes. So that's all the responsibility she felt that she should get from the Met Police. But, you know, they weren't interested in taking it further. So, you know, we fought a bit. We pushed back and we said, no, we want you to take it further, whatever. And in the end, they said, oh, you know, we spoke to him. And, you know, as Baji mentioned, you know, he said that the man said he apologized and it was someone else in the van that he doesn't normally bring with him. So it was the van driver was claiming it wasn't him, it was someone else. But this is it. So if we go through that incident, you know, people just get talked out of it. The police will push any crime that they don't want to deal with. And, you know, it's a bit of a blanket statement here, but they will try and push you away from reporting that crime.
Well, the biggest evidence was it in Derby. So in May 2020, the Gurdwara was attacked. And early morning, about 6 a.m., an individual jumps over the wall and smashed a rock through the glass doors, came in, started smashing all the windows downstairs, and then obviously with the noise, all the Gyanis and Sivadars heard it, came down. He then runs out and runs off down the street. And there was a political message that he'd wrapped on a piece of paper and wrapped it around a brick. And it was targeted at Indians and to do with Pakistan. And he was actually from an Afghani background.
It was Kashmir, wasn't it?
Yeah. Kashmir, yeah. And the police came. And instantly, that morning, the headlines on Derbyshire Telegraph was a robbery attempt. So the police had put something out. There was a robbery attempt. Now, we met with the police that morning and said, it's a place of worship. And obviously, I was at the meeting and says, this is a hate crime and an act of terror because of the political nature of the intent of the individual and who they've targeted. And this was fairly soon after, I think, Pakistani Muslims had been targeted in India. And their refusal to even recognize the initial detectives and the officers and put it out in public as a robbery attempt was blatant management. Oh, well, we don't want to create any issue here. Let's just not recognize it as such. And then they had to apologize. They took it down and said, yeah, then they said it was a mistake. The officer mistakenly put it as a robbery on the first responder. I said, well, can you explain that? Because isn't it that if it's a place of worship, it's automatically a hate crime? And he says, yeah, it is. So I says, if someone's gone to a place of worship, how do you get robbery? And so there was always this negative thinking around it and how they get out of it. And it took us at least 3-4 meetings and community pressure for them to officially recognize it as a hate crime and investigate it as such. But that's a massive incident that was all over the news at the time. Individual incidents, they're going to find it difficult themselves. This was the whole committee, the community. And in fact, it was the community who actually identified him. And then the police later went to arrest him. But it just shows that lack of apathy because it's not coming from the top. Official policy. I mean, we see it.
Yeah.
And it is great because anti-Semitism shouldn't exist. But you can't say anything, whether that's verbal, let alone any physical attacks, that there is such understanding of it and recognition of it. And that even could go going back years, historical things people have said. Yet, probably the most visible identifiable community in the UK is Sikhs. And also recognized for the most well-integrated, most highly contributing and role model community. But why is it that hate crimes that we suffer go completely ignored or invisible, and there's a complete lack of sort of engagement from the government or the authorities to take this seriously. And I think we really need to ask ourselves, why is that? Why is it that with organizations that we have who are all saying this, those long-established organizations, whether the Sikh Federation, the Sikh Network, the Sikh Council, British Sikh Federation, Sikhs in England, you mentioned Harmandir, Sikh Women's Alliance, Balwinder Kaur Saur, the APPG themselves, and all the Parchara groups, Basics of Sikhi, Akal, the list goes on, right? Sikh Youth UK. If they're all saying this, then why is the government not listening? And then who are they listening to? So who are the few that say Gurdwaras are dangerous? Gurdwaras shouldn't have pictures of Shaheed Singhs. Gurdwaras shouldn't have Nishan Sahib because it's a sign of their sovereignty. Gurdwaras are unsafe places. And actually, this is not hate crime. And you don't need to worry about it. In fact, we can... You can, so people really do... And I call everyone listening to this, really go and find out who these people are and actually challenge them, because the more we stay quiet, the more we're complicit in that narrative being being representative.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to sort of bring it back a little bit just to, I think, something we mentioned earlier, and more to give a whole holistic view of what the Sikh Network and some of the things we work on and the joining together of these issues. So in particular, the you know, by the Vinjit Singh, I wanted again to touch on the work we were doing on the census. If we just look at, obviously the census covered a range of topics, but if you just look at this, the hate crime aspect of it, for really the people out there listening in, how would you explain what would happen if, for example, we got the Sikh tick box within ethnicity? What direct sort of implications and kind of positive benefits could we have seen, you know, to help fight things like hate crime and that, and to fight for kind of better, a more realistic representation? I think, just like Jaz said as well, actually just being judged on the same criteria as kind of every other faith.
I think what is great is the people that listen to this podcast will understand that the census is just the starting point. So if you get recognition under the census, we're already recognized as a faith. I have no problems with that. But because we're not recognized and have a separate ethnic tick box, what it means is all these public bodies, whether they be schools, hospitals, the police, whoever, 40,000 of them, can choose to ignore us. Because they do collect some data based upon faith, but they often say that's quite patchy. It's not based on making decisions. You know, half the population don't even say what their faith is. So we already start at a major disadvantage by not having that Sikh ethnic tick box. But what I wanted to do, to bring it back to, was because we started off by talking about the FBI data. And we've talked about, in every October, the Home Office release hate crime data. And the most recent ones that were released in October 22 showed Sikhs had the largest increase in reported hate crime compared to other faiths, all other faiths. Now, why? Government don't recognize it.
Mm.
It's because of organizations, Sikh organizations, that have been encouraging Sikhs to come forward and report these crimes to the police. And I'm just going to touch on two others, because I think when we talk about these crimes, people listening will think, hold on a minute, I could have reported this. So I already talked about what happened to me personally, but I'm going to talk about two others. One is, before that, you'll recall there was an event in Trafalgar Square, I want to say in 2019, in the summer of 2019. And some of these, what I would call agent provocateurs, turned up with placards showing a turban and quoting, you know, it was an offense. And these were people that were certain television stations, and, you know, photographed often with the Indian High Commission. I reported that to the Met sitting at home. I couldn't be there that day. I think my father-in-law had passed away or something. Couldn't be there. I saw those images and I thought, well, let's test the police out. So I reported it. You know, that was 2019. Had the Met done anything about it? No. They only did something with my case, which came after, because it was hard. You know, it was me. But even that was a hate crime, so you can report it. You see something that is targeting our identity, you can report it. And the other one I want to talk about is a live case. So for the last 4 months, I have been talking to the Met about a hate crime, malicious communications. And it started in October 22. And I started with the person who's the head in the Met, a hate crime. So I started from the top. Let's start from the bottom. Martin Kirby, I'll name him. And his staff, and I've been through police officer, I've had conversations, I've had written things. Because of what I'm reporting is full of politics, full of foreign government involvement, potential bribery, potential exchange of money, involve senior officials. They just don't want to do anything. You know, and I've gone back right to the top and said, you know, I have a crime reference number, but the Met refuses to take a formal statement. So I've sent them a 5-page statement and they still don't want to take it any further because it's difficult, because we're raising very difficult issues that go to the heart of hate, discrimination, racism, because that is effectively the fight we're fighting against the establishment. Is we can only do these sorts of podcasts and encourage others to say, if you witness or experience yourself hate crime, report it, because that's the only way we can then go to the likes of Sky and say, look, CK crime is now the most reported, it's seen the biggest increase in the last 12 months, and that's without any government support. And that's the other thing, and go back to the APPG report. So what the APPG report said is, what's it called? What's the definition? Thirdly, how do we increase reporting? The Jewish community and anti-Semitism had the Community Safety Trust receiving millions of pounds to encourage better reporting, as well as other things, you know, protection of synagogues, etc. And great that the Jewish community has managed to secure, you know, I would probably say something around £50 million from government. And yet the Jewish community is smaller than the Sikh community, less visible than the Sikh community. And I would argue the only reason why their reported hate crimes are so high is because they've got resources and government backing for it. Tell Mama was the attempt. Government funded that. Muslim community. And yet, what we're saying is, what is the equivalent? And Sajid Javid, 5 years ago, as the community secretary, and it's still on the government website, said he was putting money aside for Sikh and Hindu hate crime. Not a single penny of that money has been used, because politicians, you might convince them at the top that this is an issue you need to address, but then you hit the barrier of bureaucrats. And we can't leave this subject without mentioning the fact that what happened a year ago is that money was allocated to the police to allocate. So what they've done is set up a police-related body called, I think, Sikh Guard. That is not the way to get ordinary Sikhs to report hate crimes, is by giving the money to the police. Would you do that to the Jewish community and give it to Jewish police officers or Muslim police officers? No, you give it to community-run organizations. And it can be a brand new organization. That's not the point. We want to encourage our community to come forth, report these crimes. And we've actually been successful without any government support in doing that. But I think, finishing on a positive note, we can only say, hopefully with the next government, we will be able to make inroads to make sure they do take this seriously. And, you know, and politicians run a mile, just like they do when anti-Semitism comes up. They daren't go there. No one would be criticizing Sikhs, our Gurdwaras, questioning our identity. I think that's our ultimate target.
The Sikh God, the funding going to the police to monitor anti-Sikh hate crime is probably the, you know, it's the worst thing that can happen. There's no independence. There will be no scrutiny. And I fail to see what benefit they actually thought that would pose, because the whole point of independent organizations being set up, community-led, is the independence, is the fact that you will scrutinize. I will tell you that now, staff members, Metropolitan or police staff members in general, will be very cautious and careful about criticism that they will put out on the police force. So it doesn't work. It won't work.
It doesn't work. And this is what we talked about. This is this whole agenda to pick, and we've had this not only with the police, but the government want to have hand-picked representatives. We have sat with the Home Office and they invite the Sikh Association of the Home Office to these meetings. These are Sikh individuals that are employed by the Home Office. There is complete compromise of their position to say, come a meeting and you have to choose between standing with your community or with your employer. And they're not even representatives. No one knows who they are. How are they even in any position going to contribute to a community issues roundtable matter? And they've extended this with the police now, is rather than the police engaging with representative organizations that are from the grassroots, are connected to all the issues and matters, they go and set up these Sikh association, internal networks, which are great for promoting internal
staff
offices,
welfare and well-being.
And no point in any other community have those internal groups crossed over and become the representatives.
Mm.
And not only on police matters, on any matters. The farmers' protest was an example where the Sikh Police Association massively overstepped and started to speak for the Sikh community and actually then spread false information about attending the big protest that was held in December in London. And it's becoming more and more like this. And whilst we have a West Midlands-wide, sort of UK-wide ban on police officers' recruitment in Gurdwara and Sikh spaces, that the police fail, rather than engaging with the community, actually try and go off on a different tangent and think that they can just tick the box of Sikh engagement and covering Sikh issues by doing it themselves. And the funding that you mentioned, the Sikh Network applied for that funding or part of that funding to set this up. We'd had the groundwork, we had all the, and it was refused. So it is just, people need to ask these questions, because we're not just sprouting conspiracy. We have no real issue of anybody doing the Seva, right? We're not paid for this.
But they need to be independent.
But they've got to represent the community.
Exactly.
And they've got to be of the community, not employers of the people that the Sikh survey said that they was the direct reason they don't report it, because they don't trust the police. Yet you give funding and control to the police to then set up. And it's just the absolute disbelief that this is the reality. And I think a lot of people are asleep to this. And there is a huge awakening and awareness that is needed to our true position as a community and whether it's our influence or how we're treated or considered by the establishment is a real issue. And we've got to get away from this. Don't say anything. You'll be shut down. You'll be challenged. I think it's incumbent on every Sikh to raise these questions, especially when it concerns the faith and the dharm. There should be zero compromise.
Can I read out the... I've got the APPG report in front of me, and I just want to read out the official definition, the proposed official definition that the all-party parliamentary group put out there for institutes to embed around anti-Sikh hate. So they said, anti-Sikh hate is any incident or crime which is perceived by the victim or any other person to be religiously or racially motivated by hostility, hatred, or prejudice against Sikhs or those perceived to be Sikh people. Gurdwara organizations gurdwaras and property as well. So it's wider than a lot of people think. And I think that mindset as well, that our community need to change around what anti-Sikh hate is important. Because according to CPS, you know, that hostility is ill will, spite, contempt, prejudice, unfriendliness, antagonism, resentment, and dislike. So, you know, it isn't all about physical attacks. It's not always about verbal attacks as well. You know, you do have to look beyond that.
And I think that applies to Sikh practices as well.
Mm. Whether it's, it does. That's what I'm trying to imply. Yeah. Yeah,
Sort of limiting what its significance is and trying to distort its meaning. These are all attacks on Sikhi, on the Dharma. These things have to be considered as such and treated as such as hate crime.
Absolutely. And I think it's the comparisons that we're looking at with the kind of anti-Semitism campaigns and anti-Islamophobia campaigns and you know, the funding and that type of thing. And the numbers that anti-Sikh crime is now producing, both home and abroad, is kind of mind-boggling, really. And while you guys have been talking, it's just kind of been going in my mind of where, you know, how do we get to this point? So, Jazz, you mentioned like the Sikh network, we applied for that funding. What would have been the plan, just for, I suppose, podcasters and listeners' perspective, in terms of your vision of how we think we'd build something that would tackle this? And the other question is, do you think, if we compare to this previous two phases, that anti-Sikh crime, hate crime actually needs to be branded? Because with Muslims, it's Islamophobia. With the Jews, it's anti-Semitism. Is along with raising the profile and to get it to, again, what we're saying to being treated with the same kind of parameters that other faiths are.
Well, quickly, and then Badger probably shared a bit on it. I think anti-Sikh hate is the hashtag that's been sort of widely used now, and that's part of it referenced in the report, that anyone who faces hate crime of the description that Montgomery read out, they should hashtag it anti-Sikh hate. And in terms of the funding, it was around independent recording and monitoring of hate crime across all our gurdwaras and accessible to all groups. Having something online isn't accessible to the elders who face racial abuse every day on public transport or on the streets. So it was making it accessible. And whilst they've refused and pretty much done the same thing, but through their own groups, it's not reached anywhere. I don't know anybody. I wouldn't even know where to go to report it. Whilst we've been working directly with Gurdwara, Guru Nanak Gurdwara Smedic is a now set up, trained official hate crime reporting center. We're doing the same with Gurdwara in Leicester, Derby. So we are working with Gurdwara directly, but we're doing the job of government. This is the thing, that things that happen in our community is because volunteers put their time and effort into these things and setting up practices, which is no different to what our elders had done, but we're doing it without the state, but it's their responsibility and they are shirking their responsibility. And now I think our future generations need to recognize that and challenge it more.
So just to add to that, Sukrat Singh, so if you do a comparison of what CST and Tel Mama do with anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, is, as you just mentioned, you know, third-party reporting, i.e. in Gurdwaras, is one aspect. The other thing is to obviously create a online mechanism whereby people can report directly to community organisations. And I think what then happens is you take that basic data and it effectively then goes to the police and they compare it with the records they've got, people directly reporting to them. And that is the only way they realise, for different communities, you know, is the community more successful at getting people to report to them and therefore they don't pick up this thing and therefore they make decisions on that basis. In this case, because they want to sideline Sikhs full stop, they've actually firstly not allocated any funds. When they have allocated funds, 5 years later, they move those funds from one police body to another police body. And what'd be interesting is there will be members, there'll be police officers that are linked to Sikh Guard tell us how many cases have been reported to Sikh Guard, but not reported to the police, because you're one and the same thing. Therefore, it's zero by definition. And therefore, the community is not being involved. So those that are listening to this podcast need to understand, you know, we pay our taxes. We have every right to a government to recognise anti-Sikh hate and put in the resources to Sikh community organisations, our Gurdwaras, to encourage third-party reporting, set up that process by which then we can point to the police. I think we already have the evidence. How can we, without any resources, through the UK Sikh survey, through publicity, through mainstream media about individual cases, get more and more Sikhs to report to the police? That's what we've done. So the official Home Office data shows that we are more successful than the police. So when others are seeing less religious hate crime, we're seeing more. And one thing we've forgotten to mention about this is we have seen the recent phenomena that we've talked about, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia and anti-Sikh hate, is we've had this phrase Hindu phobia. And what the FBI data shows, that it's virtually non-existent in the US. And actually, the Home Office data in October 22 showed it was virtually non-existent in the UK. And actually, the cases had even gone down, whilst for all other faiths, they've gone up. So this is, again, a political thing. It's driven by the BJP government that wants to promote in the West that Hindus are being targeted. It's the exact opposite. What they're feeling is the right-wing policies of the BJP government that they are promoting worldwide is what the BBC are challenging, politicians are challenging in different countries, and that they want to label as Hindu phobia because it's easy. And we can't let, you know, a foreign government dictate to Western governments. And the data is there. And that's why we need to emphasize this data from the FBI and the Home Office to say it's a non-existent phenomenon, but they have a government that's pushing it. I remember I was at the conference that was hosted by the UK to talk about religious freedoms. And, you know, we had Liz Truss, who was then the Foreign Secretary, speaking there. You know, we had all sorts of people there from across the globe. And what did the one speak from the Hindu Forum talk about? Hindu phobia. And unfortunately, the Sikh representative there, and I'll mention it, Baiminder Singh, didn't touch upon this at all. And this is the point, is if we're going to be in forums and we're going to share stages, please consider the grassroots of the community and their day-to-day experiences and never be frightened to raise what our gurus taught us is, you know, you see injustice, you see inequality, then at least raise your voice or stand aside. And like I said, the reason why we've gone specific and we mentioned names is this is what these are the sorts of people the establishment chooses and uses. So it's not necessarily their fault. It's they know if they go to a person, they already know what they're going to hear. That's why they won't go to organizations with grassroots links, because we experienced from the Sikh round tables, they didn't like us challenging government, whether it be about Afghanistan, hate crime, they just didn't like it. And I think we just need to carry on doing the same thing.
Yeah. And it's not even, you know, there's no excuse for, I suppose, any Sikh representative on these stages not mentioning it, because it's self-evident. Look at the figures that are coming out left, right, and center. It's nothing that's now in, you know, it's not anything that's in the background or is this myth. It's there as, you know, it's objectively reported facts. And, you know, we're not even anywhere close to where we need to be reporting wise. So, no, but thanks, guys. This has, you know, really been, again, a really great episode. I just want to finish off by, again, reminding, you know, everyone listening in to, you know, please, you know, if report any hate crimes that, you know, you feel you've suffered or someone in your family has suffered, you know, through your kind of local police service online. And, you know, don't be afraid to report, because this is how we're going to get, you know, help to get to some form of, you know, positive conclusion. So please report hate crimes. And the APPG report into hate crime that we've been touched on in this podcast that was released in October 2020. You can find a copy of that and download it at theseatnetwork.com in our publication. So you'll see it straight on the homepage. So yeah, do have a look at it and, you know, get a better understanding of the situation and help spread that word. So Jaz Singh, Mankamal Singh, and Bhai Davinderjeet Singh, thanks again for your wisdom during this hour or so. And until next time, Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa, Waheguru Ji Ka Fateh.
Welcome to the Sikh Network Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing current and topical issues affecting Sikhs across the global diaspora.